So as my family will tell you, I'm not much of a baker. One of my jobs in high school was being a line cook, and a line cook is all about kind of action and execution, and it's not about sort of recipes and kind of long periods of time, which baking kind of requires, right? Baking requires a lot of patience. You've got to, you know, mix the dough and let it rise and knead it and all this stuff and then stick it in the oven and wait a while. And I've just never had that kind of patience. So I do love, however, eating fresh baked goods, especially bread, right, that comes out of the oven and you open it up and the steam rises and it's the most amazing thing, right? It's a good thing I don't live close to Breadsmith because I would be down there, you know, buying these wonderful loaves of all kinds of things. Of, you know, they have, you know, farmer's wheat with cranberries and Tuscan herb formaggio bread and all of this, and it would be very bad on our budget. So if you've ever been to France, you know what a revelation it is to join in the French custom of getting your daily baguette, right, at the patisserie. So when my sister first visited France in college, she was, like many people, just overwhelmed by how wonderful it was to get these baguettes. And so she had an idea on her last day, which is she would bring one home with her, right? So she packed it up, got on the airplane. By the time she landed in San Francisco, I don't know how many hours later, as you can imagine, that baguette was thoroughly rock hard, right? Totally dried out. Well, we're in the midst of a series of Sundays where the readings are about bread. What do we make of these texts and these stories in a world of low-carb diets, of food insecurity, of bread factories, and craft bakeries? Well, in Jesus' day, bread was a basic daily staple, baked daily. Thus, that line from the Lord's Prayer, "Give us today our daily bread," right? That was a familiar thing in Jesus' day. There weren't a lot of preservatives. You didn't go to the supermarket and choose from like a big wall of a gazillion different types of pre-sliced bread with a sell-by date kind of a week ahead of time and take it home and expect it still to be good. Bread was made very locally, often at home, of course. So nothing could be more ordinary and more necessary for survival than daily bread. In order to understand the text that you just heard this morning, we just need to back up a little bit into the Old Testament and revisit a story that we heard last week, which was about the manna in the wilderness, right? So the people of Israel get freed from slavery. They're led out into the desert, the wilderness, and God provides for their hunger by giving them this manna, this sort of weird stuff that's kind of a bread that goes bad if you try to store it up or hoard it. It's not necessarily popular with the people. And so when we heard in 1 Kings about Elijah making this journey through the wilderness toward Horeb, which is Mount Sinai, right? And being given somehow this bread to sustain him on his journey, that is a retracing, right, of that Exodus story through the wilderness. And Elijah does that at a time when he's being persecuted, a time of famine and drought in the land. And he's sustained on that journey. All the way through John's gospel, Jesus uses these rich metaphors to talk about himself and his ministry. And as in today's lesson, often people don't really get it, right? So he says, "I'm the bread of life." And his listeners kind of scratch their heads and say, "Wait a minute. Like, we know this guy. Like, you know, we know his parents, like Mary and Joseph, and he grew up, you know, in a village nearby. He's from the neighborhood. What do you mean he's the bread of life? What's that about, right?" On the one hand, their imagination is just too literal, kind of like Nicodemus, like, you know, how do you get back in your mother's womb to be born again? Like, that doesn't work. But I think there's also something deeper going on here. They can't quite accept that this spiritual, heavenly reality, right, of bread, sustenance, is appearing in the presence of this relatively ordinary guy they know, Jesus, right, in daily life, in the neighborhood. And Jesus tells them, quit murmuring, right? What are you complaining about? What's that bickering over there, right? Just like the people in the wilderness were murmuring. Jesus recalls all of that as well. So these stories that we have today are stories about spiritual presence and sustenance through the ordinary. I think one of the great tendencies of humanity is either to over-spiritualize, right? To sort of assume that whatever is sacred or divine or transcendent is somehow just totally disconnected from ordinary life in the world, right? It's very easy to do that. Kind of like what Jesus' audience is doing here, right? Bread from heaven, well, that must be some really transcendent, faraway thing. Now, the other tendency is to over-materialize, which our culture is particularly good at. We'll just kind of assume there isn't any transcendent, sacred, spiritual world, and it's all about the material and what we can kind of empirically kind of verify. And all the way through Christian history, the last 2,000 years, people have struggled with the paradox, right, and the genius of Christianity, which is to say, both of those impulses are actually wrong, because at the heart of the Christian story is the sacred becoming present in the ordinary, right? That's what Christians call the incarnation. God showing up in the neighborhood, in everyday life, in a concrete person, Jesus, in a way that opens up the presence of the sacred in everyday life for us as well, in our neighborhoods. So what does it mean then to say that Jesus is bread? He's the one in whom we receive life as a gift, not something to be earned. So just like that manna, which was God's gift, God's provision, something that the people who were hungry, right, in the desert, had to rely upon and depend upon day by day and couldn't earn, couldn't even store up, right? So in a sense, when they were murmuring back in the wilderness, saying, well, you know, hey, in Egypt, like, we were in slavery, but at least we had, you know, regular food, which we kind of earned, Jesus is calling to mind a whole different economy. Not the economy of empire, by which we earn and control and hoard resources, or others do, and there's always oppression that's involved in empire, but this economy of grace or gift. And one of the great themes of Jesus' teaching is that the ultimate story, the ultimate economy, if you will, is an economy of grace and gift. It doesn't take away the importance of hard work and productivity and all of that, creativity, that's all good. But ultimately, we cannot earn right relationship with God and one another. There's something in us that tries to do that, right? We try to get it right. We try to fix the world. We always fall short, right? So Jesus comes into that very world and offers us restoration, healing, renewal as gift, as free gift. So Jesus as the bread of life is about us being joined to him in such a way that our hungers are fulfilled, our hungers for connection, for love, for hope, for meaning, for peace, for human flourishing, right, in all its fullness. Jesus says that being drawn to him is being drawn to the one whom he called Father, and who the Bible also refers to in maternal imagery, the creator, right, the source of all of life. It's about being reconnected with God and others, not just temporarily, but eternally. The bread does not perish, he says. It's living bread, just like he talks about himself as living water, fresh water, a spring that never runs dry. So where does this bread show up in our world? I think it's in the most ordinary places, actually. It's the simple peanut butter and jelly sandwich by which a mother feeds a hungry child, the grace and beauty of a simple home-cooked meal. It's wherever human need is recognized and filled with love and connection, wherever relationships are restored and forgiveness offered, and the cycle of hatred and retribution is broken, wherever new life emerges. So like Jesus's listeners, we might ourselves think only in supernatural terms and kind of place God's presence and grace out of reach of us and of the ambiguity of our world. But the bread of life comes precisely when we're hungry, precisely when we're hurting or lonely or in need of healing. It can't be earned. It can't be hoarded. It'll go stale like that rock of a baguette my sister tried to bring back from France. We have to depend upon it day by day, as a gift. I suspect that somewhere in you this morning, there's a hunger. Hunger that may not even be clearly recognized or acknowledged or understood. In a few minutes, we're going to gather at this table. I invite you to bring that hunger as we share a meal and are fed by the bread of the body of Christ. We gather to receive what we are, which is the body of Christ as this community. And as our reading from Ephesians says, being the body of Christ makes us a community in which falsehood can be put away, truth can be spoken, the reality of anger acknowledged, but not made to divide us. Where we may offer grace to one another, forgiving one another as we have been forgiven. For we are both recipients of this bread and sharers of it as well. We are the ordinary means by which God meets others' needs and feeds them as well. Jesus says, whoever eats of this bread will live forever. May it be so for us.